Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight, and I'm glad to be sober. Just to be sober. If you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, I hope the word being sober doesn't offend you as bad as it offended me when I said in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I said in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, it was on the 4th day of November, 1959, and the people of Alcoholics Anonymous talked to me about being sober. And I didn't think Alcoholics Anonymous had anything to offer me. And the reason I didn't think that is because I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. Just physically sober. But you see, that had always seemed to be my problem. If I could have stayed loaded forever, I'd have never came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I kept getting interrupted out there on my happy road of destiny. You know, it's amazing, isn't it, how people keep inventing things to help us. They dream up new programs to help us. They got a thing out in my country called intervention. I want you to know that the Los Angeles County Sheriff knew about intervention in 1940. And if you live the way I live, they'll intervene in your life, too. You don't have to worry about Mama or anybody else telling you about it. But I have come to understand, since I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous from my first meeting to this one, and I think about being sober quite a bit. When I think about it today, the idea that there's no alcohol or chemicals in my system doesn't even enter into the picture. Sobriety is the way I live. I lived a certain way for a long period of time, and for a long period of time, I couldn't stay sober. I just couldn't stay sober. I have lived this way of life for a long period of time, and all that period of time, it had been necessary for me to drink anything, swallow anything, smoke anything, or stick anything in my arm, or be locked up anywhere. And now that's amazing to me, because I hear people all the time talk about not drinking and being sober. And I'll tell you, I know that physical sobriety is paramount, and I know it's a very necessity thing for me, but you got to understand, see, I'm alcoholic. And alcohol is not my problem. Sobriety is my problem. I could never stand to be sober before I got to you good people, and you told me how to live so I didn't have to drink anymore. And that was amazing to me. Now, I'm glad. I like to, before I get caught up in myself, I'd like to thank Dick for allowing me the privilege of participating in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I have always considered it some type of a privilege to be allowed to come and sit with you good people. I have never been able to get it through my head that I have a right to be here just because I don't drink alcohol. I think it's a privilege. And I think it's much more of a privilege when I'm asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an active participating member of the Big Book Group in Bellflower, California, which is probably the best group of Alcoholics Anonymous in the world. And I have a big deal there. I started that meeting 19 and a half years ago, and now I've worked my way up to assistant chairman. That means I get to help the chairman put the chairs away on Monday nights. So if you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous, don't worry. About as high as you ever get here sober. You get any higher than that, you leave. But I'm glad to be here tonight. I'm glad to be here tonight fully clothed and in my right mind. And I only tell you that because a little over 33 years ago tonight, I was crawling around on my knees in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. Now, because of a loving God has expressed himself through our program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and knees like an animal. If I get nothing else out of this deal, I could live with that for a long time. It makes me feel good. I'd like to be able to stand here tonight without any doubt in my mind whatsoever and tell you without any doubt in my mind whatsoever that that's where alcohol and drugs took me to. Oh, I'd love to be able to tell you that. That's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol and drugs did in my life, they kept me alive long enough to find Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all. I'm as sure as I'm standing here, without alcohol working in my life, I'd have blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I've always been some type of emotional misfit. I never seemed to belong anywhere. I was angry and hostile and bitter. I didn't like where I was, who I was, who I was around. I didn't like nothing. I was just an angry, hostile little kid. And I knew as much about whiskey and what it would do to people when I was 6 years old as I know tonight. I had a ringside seat watching people drink whiskey. I had uncles who drank whiskey and went to penitentiaries. I had aunts who drank whiskey and worked in those houses on the other side of the track. I had a mother who drank whiskey and beat up my dad. I had a dad who drank whiskey and beat up my mother. They both drank whiskey and beat me up. I saw what whiskey did to people. I said, I ain't going to drink. I'm not going to be like them. I'm going to be better than they are. I'm going to step out into that world. I'm going to have something, do something, and be something. But one day, sitting on the back porch of my grandpa's house, I saw where my grandpa stashed his bottle. And as natural as breathing in and out, the first opportunity I had, I went and got that jug and took a drink. Something I said I'd never do, but it was as natural for me to do that as it was for me to breathe. And in that instant of my life, when I turned that jug up and took a drink, in that instant of life, something happened in my life. My life was never the same again for the next 20 years of my life. You see, I didn't know for a long, long time that that reaction or that abnormal reaction that I had to alcohol is what makes me an alcoholic. I didn't know that. I thought that you drank a lot of whiskey and got a lot of 502s, those are drunk drivings in my part of the world, and ran over people and had a lot of trouble. I thought that's what made you an alcoholic. But that's not what makes you an alcoholic. I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. That doesn't mean I have a bad reaction to alcohol, because my reaction to alcohol was that that stuff went down inside of me and instilled the screaming madness. It took me from the black pit of nothingness, stood me into the gray fringe of the business of living, and installed in me some type of arrogance. It said, damn you world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here. That's what alcohol did for me. Man, if alcohol still did that, I'd still drink it. But it didn't do that. Somewhere along in that lottery of life, it just quit working. That's what makes me alcoholic. I have an abnormal reaction to alcohol, and it's also coupled with another thing that I find in my life. I find out that once I start drinking, I can't stop. I've never been able to stop. I'm standing here before you tonight with almost 32 years without any type of alcohol or in my system, and right up to this instant, I haven't stopped drinking. I have never been able to stop drinking. I can't drink and live, and of myself, I can't keep from drinking. Something obviously has happened to me. Every time I ever drank, I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath a bridge and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, they pulled me out of a car in Compton after I took a drink and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Well, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I traveled around out there, man. I went from reform school to reform school to junior penitentiaries to penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I like nut house. I mean, really, it's a little macho. I mean, I kind of like it. You know what I mean? I don't know how you were. In my neighborhood when I was a kid, we used to stand around on the street corners and try to be bad. We acted bad. We smelled bad. We talked bad. We were acting bad. We didn't know what we were doing, but we were bad. We had each other convinced we were bad, and the heroes in my neighborhood all went to the penitentiary. We used to stand around and say, there's Richard. Richard just got out of San Quentin. How would you like to be standing on the street corner now, and you're looking for a hero, and somebody says, there's Joe. Just did 30 days in the care unit. Not my neighborhood. I'm sitting on a furlough from a reform school. I'm 10, 11 years old, I guess. I'm drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine, which was my drink. I started on wine and worked down. Most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine. We were talking about it at the table. That's because Marco Petri was the experimental stage of the Thunderbird. That's why you never heard of it. I'll tell you how bad it was. That stuff never saw a grape. That's how bad it was. But I'm sitting there and I'm drinking this stuff. I'm on a referral from a reform school. I got a gallon. I'm drinking it. And I hear people saying AA all the time. Now I hear them. I don't know if it's true or not. It quit working. Well, I tell you something. It never quit working. It has never quit working. It just didn't kick in the afterburners. I always wanted the afterburners. Gone. And I don't know what to do. And a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, why don't you try these? And he gave me some pills. I don't remember saying to him, what are those? Will they bother me if I take them? Thank God they weren't X-lax, that's all I can tell you. Yeah? Now we could have a whole new 12-step program called Laxatives Anonymous. And I could be standing here tonight as an adult child of a laxative taker. I would have been functional, but Mother sat on the toilet all the time when I was little. I hear stuff stupider than that in AA meetings. It worked, all I can tell you. Thank God it worked. Because I'm sitting on that street corner a couple of years later on a furlough from another reform school, and I'm eating pills and drinking wine and ain't working, and a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm and ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. I live out in the streets, and I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy everything that comes in contact with me. And the reason I do that is because I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things and a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, and I got an ego bigger than this whole room. I spent my entire lifetime before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lived upon the face of this earth. I wasn't concerned about you. Only if you had something I wanted, then I was concerned about you until I got whatever it was that you had that I wanted. And then I went on about my business as if you didn't even exist. I spent my entire lifetime before I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous without ever one time in my life uttering the word love to another human being who lived upon the face of this earth. Love was not in my vocabulary. And the reason not is because takers don't love. Takers take. Takers use, but we don't love. If I told you I loved you, I gave you an edge. And takers don't give people edges. Takers keep the edge. And I'll tell you, if you live that way for any period of time like I did, you'll end up like I ended up 33, 34 years ago if you live long enough, crawling around that cell in solitary confinement, drifting in and out of total insanity, and there ain't nobody left to write penny postcards to you. I used them all up, folks. I threw every single thing I had, every person I had in the fire, and used them all up. I used up everything. Users and takers use up everything. That's the only way we can live. I don't know how else to live that way. In 1951, on my way to the penitentiary, I'm standing in the old Los Angeles County Jail, and my mother's screaming at me through the vision screen that I'm a murderer. It seems that my baby brother, my 17-year-old brother, had gotten into some of my poison, took an overdose of, and died. I think that's one of the toughest things that I've ever had to live with in my life. That happened in 1951, and I haven't really got over it yet. There's some things you just can't get away with, but I tell you, there's some things you can live with. That's one of the things in the wreckage of my past that I've never been completely and totally able to resolve within myself. Because if I was capable of caring about anything before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I cared about my baby brother. And I had to crawl back. I remember my actions that day. I remember going back and sitting in that cell like it was yesterday. I can see it sitting up on that cell and knew I was supposed to do something and knew I was supposed to feel something, but I didn't know what it was. I remember being handcuffed between two detectives 3 days later. They stood us out underneath a tree, and they're burying the only thing in the world I probably cared anything about, my baby brother, and I didn't know what to do. I just stood there. I felt everything. My family's standing there. They won't even let me near my family. My family's looking at me with that look in their eye. Look what you've done now, scum. You've killed our baby. Killed our baby. Man, I had a tough time with that. I went on to the penitentiary, and I stayed there 4.5 years. I came out of there 4.5 years sicker than I was when I went in there. Just because I go somewhere and don't drink doesn't mean I get any better. I just get worse. That's all. I come walking out of that institution bound determined what a psychiatrist in San Quentin told me wasn't true. He said, Johnny, people like you don't change. He says, you're doomed to die in an institution. He took me down and showed me a little green room. He says, you're going to end up here, hotshot. And I told him, not me. I'm different. Theme song of the alcoholic. I'm different. Ha! I come walking out of the institution, I had that deal beaten. 6 months later, I'm laying in a nut house kicking and screaming. And that's when I made my round of some of the better laughing academies in the country, interviewing psychiatrists. We used to have meaningful conversations, the doctors and I. I'd sit there with my wraparound overcoat on, and we'd talk to one another. He'd talk to me about my mother, and I'd talk to him about his mama. And he introduced me to a thing called better living through electricity. Just wonderful. They had a bad attitude. Yes, you would have a bad attitude if they did that to you. It would make it really wonderful, I'll tell you that, when you remember what they did to you. And what I hope and pray to God is my last interview with a psychiatrist happened to me in a federal government hospital in Fort Worth, Texas. If I live to be 1,000 years old, I'll never forget that day. Because I'm through. Now, I don't know I'm through, but I'm through. I'm in a lot of trouble. Now, I don't mean trouble. I mean real trouble. My trouble is this. I can't get rid of me anymore. I can't turn off the nightmares anymore. I can't get rid of the faces of the people I've harmed or the things I've done. I can't do that anymore. And I don't know what the answer is. I'm in an awful lot of trouble as I move in and sit down at this man's desk. And I look up against the wall and I see all of his plaques and his diplomas and his degrees. And I think for an instant, just an instant, there was a ray of hope came into me. Maybe this is the answer. Maybe this is where it all ends. God, I hope so, because it can't go much further. And I knew that. I'm at the end of my rope. The minute the doctor started to talk to me, he hadn't opened his mouth and said 5 words. Any little ray of hope I had, he threw clean out the window. Because he looked at me and he said, Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problems. When I'm a kid in the Hutchinson State Reform School, my counselor told me if I didn't drink, I'd be all right. When I'm juvenile hall in Los Angeles, my counselor told me if I don't drink, I'm going to be all right. When I'm in Whittier State Reform School, my counselor told me not to drink these things and do these things, and I'd be all right. They told me that in Pacific Lodge Boys Home. They told me that in San Quentin. They told me that in Folsom. They told me that wherever I went. What none of those people ever took into consideration was that every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am right now. As physically sober. How many times I wanted to scream out at them, good God, doctor, don't you understand? Because he doesn't. I'm sorry. If you're not an alcoholic, you'll never understand me. You'll never understand why I drink, and I'll never understand why you don't if you're not an alcoholic. Really true. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous works, you know, because one alcoholic talks to another alcoholic. I didn't know that. People never understand. Alcoholics. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous works. It's the only thing that works. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. One drunk, one alcoholic talking. I don't like the word drunk. Drunks don't have to go to meetings. Alcoholics have to learn how to live differently. One alcoholic talks to another alcoholic, and something happens between those two people, and they build some type of a bridge of understanding that walks behind them, and as long as this one is sober in front of the other one, it's leading them down the path and staying sober, they can stay sober together. Now, it was never true, ever before, except for a short period of time in 1840-something when the Washingtonians group was going. The alcoholics have ever been able to stay sober until a stockbroker talked to a doctor in 1935 in Akron, Ohio. It's amazing to me. It's the only thing that's ever worked. In 5,000 years of recorded history, Alcoholics Anonymous is the only thing that's ever worked for an alcoholic. I don't know about other things, and I don't know about a lot of other things. And if you're not alcoholic, it won't make a fiddler's damn to you anyhow, so it really doesn't make any difference. But I'm alcoholic. My life, very life, depends upon me knowing that my life is in a life and death struggle every day of my life. This is the day I get to stay sober. Not because I've been sober. I get to stay sober because this is what I do to stay sober today. I didn't know that. I didn't know that when I got on that bus in Fort Worth, Texas, went back to Los Angeles and tried to kill myself, because that's the answer for the alcoholic, you understand? But an alcoholic can no longer live with himself, and he can't get rid of himself. He commits suicide, cold sober. That's when alcoholics commit suicide. They commit suicide cold sober sometime within the first 30, 60 days of their sobriety. They don't ever do that. I ended up in the Los Angeles County Jail tied down on a bed weighing 128 pounds in yellow. That's what I'd do to me. left to my own devices, that's the way I end up. And the doctor stood at the foot of my bed that day and told me I was going to die. His words to me were, son, you're going to die, nothing I can do for you. And I said, okay. All day passed, and all night passed. He came back wandering into my room the next morning, and he said the same thing to me. And the third day, he said that I had a terror grip me that I've never known before since. The idea came to me I was going to live and not die. I was going to get up out of the bed, go to the penitentiary, come back out and start that rat race all over again, and I did not want to do that. I didn't want to live like that no more. I just couldn't handle it no more. I laid there for 18 days and 18 nights, and one night, because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I'd ever said in my life. I said, oh, God, help me. I thought for a long, long time nothing had happened. There was no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, we got an A meeting down there. And I didn't wander off into the tulip somewhere. I just went to sleep for a little while. I tell you how sick I was. 2 weeks later, two short weeks later, I'm up running around a jail looking for some more of the poison to put me back in a bed I just gotten off of. And there's a good reason for that. In the back of my mind, where my problem seems to be centered, was the knowledge, like in the mind of every alcoholic that I've ever met, the knowledge, not the thought or the knowledge that when I can't stand life on life terms any longer, I can ingest something into my system and it's okay right now. Right now is all I ever wanted. I never wanted to be all right the day after tomorrow. Now is when it's heavy. You know what I mean? Get it off of me now. I knew that, so I got loaded again. Years later, I ran around with an old man who was like a father to me, a guy by the name of Chuck Chamberlain, and he's dead now, and he used to speak a great deal about surrender. Surrender, he'd say. God, the room would shake, and the walls would rattle, and surrender. You know, I'd duck. I said to him one day, we're coming home from a meeting, I said, I want to ask you a question. He said, well, what do you want to know? And I said, didn't I surrender with just as much depth in that deathbed of mine in the Los Angeles County Jail as you did on your kitchen floor in Beverly Hills? Didn't I? Didn't I have just as much of a depth of surrender as you did? He said, why, without a doubt, son, why do you ask? I said, then how come I got loaded 2 weeks later and you never did? He said, that's very simple. You got to surrender every day. See how they are around here? Nothing to it. I stood in front of a Superior Court judge, and the man called me a blood-sucking parasite in society. He said I had no right being around decent people. He told a woman who was pregnant with my child sitting in that room, and she cared anything at all about that child, I'd never be allowed to lay eyes on it. What that man said to me that day literally drove me insane. Literally. My brain actually probably exploded in that courtroom that day because, see, the one thing I have never been able to do before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous or since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous or before I ever got here, one thing I was never able to do, I was never able to hide me from me. Now, I can hide me from you. Matter of fact, I'm a master at hiding me from you. I play little funny games with people and hide them away. I wear little funny costumes. And I play little funny roles that will keep me from you. It keeps me hidden from you. But I was never able to hide me from me. And that was the thing that used to drive me crazy. And when that man said that to me that day, it was the first time in my life I've ever heard me described as I knew I really was. And it literally drove me insane. And so for the next 9 months, I crawled around in this cell and drifted in and out of total insanity. I'd come to out of an enraged back out somewhere, picking food off the wall where I'd thrown it up against the wall a couple of days earlier. And that's what I had taken me to. See, that's what my own best judgment. When I'm running my life, that's the way I end up. That's me and God doing that. When I had me and God, I had an idiot running my life, I'll tell you that. And that ain't very good. I had just as much God in me crawling around in that cell in solitary confinement growing in and out of total insanity as I have tonight. Just as much God. Just as much a spark of God that I always have. But you see, that little spark of God inside of me has never been able to keep me sober. All by itself, it has never been able to hide that great obsession of the mind that I have and that allergy of my body. But when I take that little spark of mine and fuse it with the great spark of Alcoholics Anonymous and its people, there's enough power there to keep me sober just today. But of myself, I can't do that. Of myself, there's not enough power within me to keep me sober. There's not enough anything within me. It takes all of you and all of them and a kind and loving and cruel sponsor to keep me sober. It just seems to be that way. I don't know what to do, for God's sakes. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November, 1959, not to get sober. Not at all. I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. Matter of fact, if I'd have known where I was coming, I wouldn't even have come. The reason I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because the institution I was in let women come in there. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous almost 32 years ago to smell perfume. Now, I've been honking and sniffing around her ever since. I don't know. You leave the door open, some of us bent fenders are going to come in. And I moved in and sit down in the back row in what I lovingly like to call my throne of contempt. I had my coat collar up and my shades on because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have probably froze to death, for God's sakes. I remember looking up on the backboard, I saw two big A's, and I thought to myself, my God, I've wandered into an anti-aircraft brigade. I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. And I said to this clown sitting next to me, what is this? He says, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I sunk down in my seat. Gangsters weren't supposed to be hanging out with them winos. It's been Gangsters Anonymous or Over Hip Anonymous or Dope Fiends Anonymous. I kind of like that dope fiend business. You know what I mean? That's a little macho. Makes addicts seem kind of candy ass to me, but I like dope fiend. You know what I mean? I thought to myself, well, I'll wait for these women to get up and tell their racy stories. Now, you got to remember, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there weren't very many young, pretty girls in Alcoholics Anonymous. There were any girls like Kathy that talked here last night, wasn't in there. These old gals got up to talk and said they drank for a long time. You could look at them and know they'd been somewhere for a long time. They said, I used to drink. I said, I'll bet you did. Bad stuff, too. I knew everything when I got here. Man, I'm a walking encyclopedia of useless information when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I know so damn much about what ain't true, I don't know what is true. There's a paragraph in our book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And the last paragraph is in the tail end of a spiritual experience to describe me better than anything I could ever tell you when I said my first meeting. It said, there's a principle which is a boon to mankind, which is bound to keep him in everlasting ignorance. That is a principle of contempt prior to investigation. And I was so frightened before I got here of failing, I never tried anything. I just sat around and knocked it and thought maybe I'd get it by osmosis or something. I don't know. These people talked about God that day, and I got up and ran out of the room. But something happened to me that day in that meeting because my life has never been the same since. So I didn't just go and sin no more. Something happened to me. It was the people. I did not understand the people. The people confused me. I didn't have the slightest idea why anybody in their right mind would get up on a Sunday morning, leave their families, drive 185 miles up those back roads to come into a penitentiary to talk to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to them, who sat around and made fun of them. I had no way of knowing. See, well, that's very logical. Takers don't know anything about givers. How would a taker understand a giver? How would a taker understand somebody doing something just for the hell of doing it? How would it? I didn't know anything about that, and they confused me. One time I said to one of them, what kind of a sicko are you anyhow? I said, what do you mean by that? I said, well, you get some kind of a kick driving up here to see the animals in the zoo? What's the deal? Looked at me and said, well, you can answer that question, kid. You won't have to ask it. God, I wish that once in a while somebody would give me some psychological explanation about what they're... They tell you little things like that. When you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it. And what they were really saying, when you quit being a taker and start being a giver, you won't have to ask dumb stuff like that. Oh, and then they really confused me when they'd get at podiums like this. Because I'd be sitting back there in my throne of contempt, and they'd say things like, I used to drink, now I don't drink anymore, and everything is wonderful. I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm not drinking either, and I'm crazy. I said, I used to say, alcoholic, man, if I could just be that simple.
And all they have to do is not drink, and I'd be wonderful like they are. But I'm crazy. Then they said, you got to get active in AA. See, and I had that all mixed up. I thought active was being in motion. Quick. So I picked up ashtrays and poured coffee and smiled at people. And went back there and set an inventory point and died. I'm doing what they told me to do, and I'm nuts. And every time you ask one of these people anything, they always said, it's in the book, Johnny. I'd say, what's in the book? They said, oh, it's there. If you go look for it, you'll find it. It used to drive me crazy. I made a fantastic discovery, really. I found if you want to hide anything from an alcoholic, put it in the book. They don't ever look for it. Nowadays, they go to their therapist. I'm sorry, honey. I didn't talk about your doctor like that. But I went into this program of recovery in this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, not for any noble reason that I believe in. I believe I went into the program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous in this book to prove to you I was different, and my defiance was going to prove to you I was different. I was going to do this thing and prove to you I was different. It wouldn't work for me. And somewhere a little over 31 years ago, sitting in a room with a man doing what our program of recovery calls the fifth step, the greatest single event that ever happened to me in my life happened to me that day. I heard myself admit to this man that I was an alcoholic. From way down deep inside of me, there came a freedom that I carry with me to this very instant. As I stand before you tonight, I know exactly what's wrong with me. Exactly. I'm an alcoholic. I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I'm not an alcoholic and anything. But I was an alcoholic and something, I could not have your program. And the reason I couldn't is because I separated me from you. I was either better than you or worse than you. I didn't have to quite do it your way. I had to do it my own way. I'm different. You don't understand. You may have to do that, but I don't. You see, but when I became an alcoholic, just like you, I have to do what the alcoholics have to do to stay sober. I have to try to incorporate into my life a program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the only program of recovery for an alcoholic in 5,000 years of coexistence. And when I started to do things like that, things started to happen. People came into my life who were more concerned with saving my life than they were in hurting my feelings. Seems not to be a thing in vogue today, but I'll tell you something. I went to a meeting last Thursday night in Santa Monica. I'm talking at a meeting, and I walked in, and they bring a bunch of them people in from those recovery houses, and the guy said to me, are you going to talk about God, Johnny? And I said, probably. Why? He said, oh, you shouldn't do that. I said, why not? He said, it's the new people. He said, they're sensitive. If you talk about God, you may run them out of Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, I said, well, let me tell you new people something. Or you mediums or you old. If God will run you out of Alcoholics Anonymous, whiskey will run your rusty butt back in here. That's what it's really all about. I didn't know that. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, my vocabulary consisted of about four-letter words. Mother ran all around it in there. It was kind of a trigger. I had people sit me in a room and word by word, sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, feed me the English language. They said to me things like, Johnny, we don't say it that way. And then I rained on them. God, I was angry. And they stood it, and they smiled, and went right back at it again. And then on the fourth day of June, 1961, I walked out of that penitentiary to a world I didn't know anything about. Now, I knew an awful lot about the program of recovery, the way it's outlined in a book. But I knew nothing about living with you. I knew nothing about a program of recovery, or nothing about a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew everywhere. I could all recite things to you. I had, to the best of my ability, completed the first 9 steps of recovery, the best I could, while I was in that institution, with letters and money and things of that nature. I'd done that. And some of the promises were fulfilled for me in that institution, which had come after the 9 steps. But I knew nothing about that. So I came out of the penitentiary, and I went home to see my mother, and she fell off the steps blind drunk. I picked her up and put her on a couch, said, "Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting." She said, "Fine, I think you should." I'd like to be able to stand here tonight and tell you my mother's sober, but my mother's not sober. My mother's 86 years old, and she still drinks whiskey out of a bottle. She's getting mixed up with a couple of them pellets nowadays. She's really getting kind of weird over there, I tell you that. But when my mother's sober, she goes to AA meetings. When my mother's sober, she's like a lot of people who think that all they got to do is just not drink and come and sit their butt in the chair and they become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I'll tell you something. Just because you come to meetings and put your butt in the chair in Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't make you a member of Alcoholics Anonymous any more than going sitting in a chicken coop and make you a chicken. I tell you, you want to really put that on there? Go sit in the garage and see how long it takes you to become a car. What happens is you get tired of sitting there, then you have to leave. I didn't know that. Then I came out, I had this cruel sponsor. This was the meanest man who ever lived. 22 years I had him before he died. His name was Norm Alpey. And I don't think anybody ever lived that was any crueler than him. He yelled at me in meetings. He'd say, "Shut up." I was just visiting. He made me sit still in meetings. I was going to go one night to the bathroom. I said, "Norm, I got to go to the bathroom." He said, "Shut up and sit still." I said, "I may wet my pants." He said, "So what? Sit down. Shut up." You know what he said to me? How cruel. He said, "Go to work, bum." I said, "Wait a minute, Norm. I'm not a bum." He says, "What are you?" I said, "I'm an AA member." He says, "You're an AA member, bum. Then go to work, bum. Bums don't work." I showed him. I went to work. And then I didn't know what you do when you get paid. What do you do when you get paid? I don't know what you do when you get paid. I go stand in supermarkets and watch people. Here they come running in there. They come running in with these kids and throw them in baskets and push them down the aisle. Throw stuff in there and people going, you know. Now I got a paycheck. My wife has come back now. She got that little girl I'd never supposed to see and I got it. I run home. I got this paycheck. Let's go to the market. She says, "What for?" I said, "That's what they do when they get paid." She said, "Who?" And I said, "Them." Have you ever tried to explain them to them? Huh? They're the reason we're in here anyhow, for God's sake. But I guess maybe I had this magnificent spiritual look that all newcomers have, you know. "We're going to the market, you bitch, or I'm going to kill you." You know what I mean? So we went to the market. We loaded the stuff. I put the kid in backwards, pushed her down the aisle. Threw stuff in there. I said, "We don't need that." I threw it out. Went home. An hour later, I went to get some money. Somebody stole her purse. You want to hear somebody scream? Listen to a thief when they get stolen from. Well, I ranted and raved and jumped and hollered. And I'll tell you this. If I'd have caught that guy, you'd have another talker here tonight. I'd be up there in Folsom telling you, "Hey, it don't work. We're all the rest of losers." That's what losers say, you know. You go to a place, "Hey, it don't work." I said, "How would you know? You never tried it." Every time I see one of them slippers, they come up to me, "That's your big thing." "Oh, I just found out. Hey, it don't work." I said, "How would you know?" Well, he said, "I've been going to that." He said, "But how would you know AA don't work? You never tried it." Oh, God, that drives them crazy. They just look at me and stomp off. Acting like Clancy now, aren't you? Do you know what my sponsor made me do? My driver's license had been suspended for the rest of my natural life when I was 24. And my sponsor, I used to have to ride my little girl's bicycle to AA meeting. Now, she had a little pink bicycle. It had a big, I don't remember it, it had a big back wheel and a little bitty front wheel. That little basket with flowers woven through it, little bell on it, you can ride it. And I used to have to ride it right through my old neighborhood onto AA meeting. And there my old partner standing on the street corner like they always do when they weren't locked up. And here I come, they're going, "Oh, that AA really works, don't it, John?" "Norm, what?
I save this money, I'm going to buy a car. She said, you have a driver's license? I said, nor my driver's license has been suspended for the rest of my natural life. He said, you won't drive a car for the rest of your natural life either. I said, why not? He said, because citizens like me have a right to be protected from jerks like you who think they have a right to do any damn thing they want to do. I showed him. I hung up and rode that bicycle. I defied him. And then I got a driver's license. I got a probationary driver's license. My parole officer got me a driver's license so I could go to work. Isn't that amazing? I had to go to work. Then I had to get a driver's license so I could go to work. Things are getting complicated now, I tell you. And so I call him up again. Hello, Norm. Hi, sir. I got the money for a car, and I got a driver's license. Did you have money for insurance? And then the day came. I had the money for a car, I had the money for insurance, and I had a driver's license. I didn't even ask Norm nothing. I just went and got that car and drove up to his house and honked the horn. Honk, honk, honk! He came out, he looked at me, he looked at that car. Now, he knew that everything was legal. He knew that. He knew I did not dare drive that car up there if it wasn't legal. He knew that. And he looked at me, he looked at that car, and he put his arms around me. And he said, Johnny, he got tears in his eyes. He put his arms around me, and he said, Johnny, he said, I'm so proud of you. He said, you're starting to get the idea. Maybe you're starting to get the idea that there's not a damn thing special about you just because you don't drink alcohol anymore. Just because you're not locked up does not mean that there's a damn thing special about you. You're just like everybody else. He says, as a matter of fact, as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you got to be just a shade above and do a shade more than everybody else does because you may be an example that somebody sees. God, what a tremendous lesson that is to find out that there ain't nothing special about me just because I don't drink alcohol. That I'm, not one of the chosen ones. I used to call him up. I'd say things like, Norm, my program ain't working. He'd say, why don't you try ours? He said things like, Jackass, your program never did work. True. You want me to tell you something? Yours doesn't either. Ours does. If your program works, you don't even need to be here. Why would you have to come to Alcoholics? Our program works. It's the only thing that ever works. Our program. See, when it's our program, I just become a part of it. I am not it. My program never worked. My program got me crawling around on my knees in a cell in solitary confinement, drifting in and out of total insanity, ripe old age, 29 years old. That's what my program did. Since I've been trying to the best of my ability on a part-time basis to stay within the confines of our program, my life has taken on a storybook thing that I don't even believe sometimes. I can't stand here and tell you every meal I've eaten has been a banquet, and every day I've lived out there on the sunny side of the street, but that's just not true. There ain't no immunity in me just because I'm sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not immune from life. I live life on life's terms. I'm out there on the streets every day where life is. That's it. I go to work. I do the things. This is not an occupation. This is my advocation. I wouldn't cheapen Alcoholics Anonymous by trying to sell it. I don't do that. My sponsor made sure of that. He made me go to work. He says, you do this as an advocation, not as an occupation. Alcoholics Anonymous is for free and for fun. It was given to you. You do it for free and for fun. And when you can do that, it's great. It's a fantastic thing. And this is an old man I used to run around with. His name was Chuck. He was a different kind of stable individual. But he was like a father to me. And he taught me like a father teaches children. But he taught me the same lessons that Norm taught me. And he taught me in a different way. I remember I used to ride around in cars with him all the time. And I'd always try to figure out how to say something to him, because he was a magnificent man. He'd walk into rooms and people would go, and I'd wave behind him, And I'm always I hear him say something, and I always try, how you are when you're new, you're always trying to take these heroes of yours and repeat what they say. Right? Well, I always screwed it up some kind of way. You know, I mean, he'd say, that ain't the way I said it. So, geez, I couldn't say anything for two more meetings. You know what I mean? I just... So one night I'm at a meeting and I snatch something off the literature table. I mean, he can't argue with this. We're riding down the road and I'm curious. Listen to this, Papa. What is it, son? I want to read you this beautiful thing. God, it was, I felt so... Oh, man, my ego was so good because I'd read this magnificent thing. He said, what is it? I said, why we were chosen. He said, hold it. What makes you think we're chosen? I said, it says here. I don't care what that says. That's not true. He said, we're not chosen, Johnny. I said, I don't care what that says. He said, we're all God's kids. All of us are. If I am, you are. And if you are, I am. Huh. I said to him, but, he said, no. He said, Johnny, it makes the rain fall on the just as well as the unjust. That's what the Bible says. I said, really? Yes. And then I said, then Papa, tell me something. How come I'm sober? You know, if I'm not chosen, how come I'm sober? I know people who are far better people than I'll ever be who aren't sober. My mother's a far better person than I'll ever dream about being. How come? He said, that's very simple. You've come to understand you're one of God's kids and you act like it, so He treats you like one. Isn't that amazing? Now, how do God's kids act? I don't know. I had to be shown how God's kids act. I had to be shown by my sponsor. That's what sponsorship is all about. I used to call Norm up and I'd say to him things like, Norm, what am I supposed to do? He says, why do you ask me, John? I said, Norm, you're my sponsor. You're supposed to know. He said, John, if I can't run my life, what makes you think I can run yours? I said, then what am I supposed to do? He says, you do what I do. I said, just what is it you do? He says, if you do what I do, then you'll know what you do. Well, I'll tell you, for the 22 years that man was my sponsor, I knew how he reacted in every given situation of life. I knew everything about him. I knew how he reacted at work, at play, on the golf course, in meetings. I knew how he treated people, consideration, how he was in restaurants, how he was courteous. Concern for all people around him. That's why he yelled at me. He wanted me to be concerned about the people sitting next to me. He didn't give a damn about me. The only thing I never knew when Norm died, I didn't know what it was like to sit in the bedroom while he was in bed with his wife. Now, if he'd asked, I'd have went in there and sat and watched. I wanted to know. See, the greatest blessing I had when I came here is that I didn't know. And I knew I didn't know, and I knew he knew. Because he was sober, he was happy, joyous and free about it. He wasn't sitting around crying the poor mouth all the time. He was going to meetings. In that car, going to meetings, and doing things, and playing golf, and going to work, and doing the things that happy, joyous, free people do. And the toughest period of my life, after 22 years, the day before my 22nd birthday, Norm Alpe dropped dead of a heart attack. And the next year and a half of my life was the most critical time in my entire sobriety, because I got some kind of an idea that because I'd been sober for 22 years that I didn't need a sponsor anymore. But I was going to use the people that I sponsored for my sponsoring. That's sick. Could you imagine one sicko trying to tell another sicko what to do? If you ain't been there, how are you going to tell anybody how to do that? And so I ran around trying to make decisions based on my own emotion. Another thing you got to know about an alcoholic like me, when my emotions and my intellect come in conflict, my emotions always win. Always win. That's why I go crazy. And so after 14, 15 months, if I survived, I never quit going to meetings. I went to 4, 5, or 6 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous a week. I work with newcomers all the time. I sponsor people. I go to meetings. I do a lot of things. Do whatever I'm asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I always have. But I'm crazy because I'm running my own life. I got no direction. I'm like a boat running around out there in the thing without a rudder. I don't know what to do. Chuck is sick. Pop is sick. I go down there and sit with him. He's sick. He don't, you know, he's talking goofy. I don't know what to do. And so one day I found myself sitting down in the mission, in the L.A. mission, and talking to Clancy about this hypothetical situation. And I looked at him and I said, Clancy, I said, it just dawned on me. I need a sponsor. And he looked at me, and I thought he was going to say, what an order. I can't go through with it. You know, you're too much for me, Biggie, I'll tell you that. And he looked at me, and he smiled, and he said, will you do what I tell you? And I said, no, Clancy, I've always done what my sponsor says. My sponsor has always been the sole authority in my life. Always. Even though I have a great belief and an understanding that there is a power greater than myself and God, I tell you, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I'd much rather have a phone call or somebody on the other end of the phone to call and to lay in the middle of that bed and try to conjure up a God that I really don't believe in. Really. Because I have been there. I have been near sober, 22, 23, 24 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been on my knees at night beside my bed with so much pain and guilt and remorse and humiliation inside of me that I can't conjure up any type of a word or a thought or a prayer. If I could have prayed, I'd been fine. And the only thing that brought me back to life at all was I'd think about one of you. I think about somebody that I'd sponsored who'd walk and come into Alcoholics Anonymous and light it lit up in their eyes. And I come to believe that if God is in those people's lives, it's in mine too, because I do the same thing they do. I go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I do what I'm asked to do around here. That's all. That's all. I'm just part of the deal around here. Another thing that irritates me more than anything in the world. I was taught differently, so that's why it irritates me. I hear people get up here and say, I'm a miracle. Do you realize what an egotistical statement that is? I'm a part of this miracle. I am a part of the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all. That means I'm just part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not the shining light. That means I get to take my seat in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and pick up the ashtrays and pour the coffee and put my chairs away. That means I get to answer the telephone with the answer, simple answer, if the date's open, it belongs to you. That's a simple message that I learned from that old man that I pass it on wherever I go. If the date's open, it belongs to you because I belong to you. You don't realize how simple my life is with that little statement. That takes care of the 4th of July, Thanksgiving, Christmas, all those other things. But you see, I don't really need Thanksgiving and Christmas and the 4th of July and birthdays because every day to me is Christmas. Every day to me is the 4th of July because every day of my life is a day to reprieve from this terrible malady of mine called alcoholism. I get to live the day sober. I get a chance to come down and spend some time and meet some new friends and learn to love some people and see some old people that I've loved for a long time who've loved me. And I get to do that, and I get to sit in meetings with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get to become an active participating part of Alcoholics Anonymous, not Alcoholics Anonymous, just a small part of it. And I sponsor people exactly the way I was sponsored. See, I don't break up a winning combination. That's the only thing that I really know to be true. I only know how I was sponsored and what's happened to me, and I pass that along. And you think sponsorship is tough in my part of the world? You should have been in Akron in 1935. It was really tough down there. I mean, they told those people, you get down on your knees or get the hell out of here. But we want to stay sober. You see, that's the deal. I want to stay sober. I don't ever want to, not because I'm afraid of drinking, or not because I'm afraid of going back to the penitentiary or to the nut house. No. That's not why I want to speak for you. I don't ever want to be that thing ever again that I was when I came to you good people almost 32 years ago. That uncaring, unfeeling, destructive taker of things and user of people. I don't ever want to be that thing ever again. And I'll have to become that before I can drink again. Physical sobriety was the thing I came here with and be the last thing I'd leave here with. Everything in between that has happened to me has been some type of emotional stability, some type of spiritual growth, some type of mental thing. I love being in meetings with Alcoholics Anonymous. I love being around members of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's into suicide. My wife committed suicide when I was 5 years sober, let me go to two little girls. I went to business training. So people booed me out of a lot of money. I went through a very painful, long time divorce about 5 or 6 years ago. It was very degrading and humiliating to me. I lived through all that. I never could go to meetings. I never could come in here. And I went and talked to my sponsor. And I said, what am I supposed to do, Clancy? He said, whatever you do it with a little bit of dignity, whatever it is. And that's what I've tried to do. I've tried to live with some type of dignity here at Alcoholics Anonymous because I walked so many years without any type of dignity. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is really all about. It's a way of life beyond description. I don't know about a lot of things, but I do know that I don't have to think to drink. I think that's in this moment. I don't have to think about drinking to drink. All I got to do is quit doing the things that make me comfortable right here, and I'll wake up drunk. That's all. All I got to do is quit doing the things that make me comfortable right here, and I'll wake up drunk. Every living thing I have in my life, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, everything. Every living thing I may ever hope to have in my life, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you better believe this. It's a long, long walk from a cell and solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand tonight. But for the grace of God, AA and good friends like this who let me share with you, I could have missed it all. God bless you.
Thanks, Johnny. And on behalf of the committee here, we'd like to present you with a token. I'd like to thank everybody for being here tonight. And tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, we'll start again. And you have a nice way of closing if you'd like to join us in the Lord's Prayer.